Hey, it's Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's another episode of Snipes and Stripes. We're excited, really excited today. We've got the legendary Craig Button on today, and there's a couple things that I want to take care of before we get into it with Craig. One is my partner JR is traveling to Europe today, so he's unavailable. We want to give a shout out to his Whiskey in the Wild. You can buy it in most states. It's phenomenal. It's a chocolate whiskey. And also to our other sponsor, BetOnline. It's down to the last four teams. BetOnline has your tournament bracket headquarters all March long. And now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here, and NBA, NHL playoffs are around the corner. As always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action. And remember to use your promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on the first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Thank you very much to BetOnline. And if I do forget at the end of the show, thank you to Caffeine TV and to BLEAV TV for also carrying our show. Craig, welcome. It's exciting to have you on here. This is probably one of the few nights that you've had off in the last many, many days. So how you been?
I've been great, Tim, and you're right. It's a busy time of the year. It's a busy time of the year. I mean, not only the race for playoff position in the NHL, but out watching junior games, the NCAA. We got to wait a weekend for before we get to the Frozen Four. So busy, 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 but it's all good at this time of the year. I mean,
Right.
spring is in the air, and certainly the excitement of hockey is in the air as well.
Well, I'd be remiss because I know you'll echo my sentiments. I just saw earlier this afternoon, my condolences go out to Boone Jenner and his wife Maggie. They had a stillborn child today, which is just tragic to hear. I saw that, and it just Boone's the ultimate competitor, and fans and officials and people in general forget that these guys are human beings, and my thoughts and prayers go out to them during this difficult time.
Well, there's an excitement when you hear about being pregnant, and you're gonna be a parent, you're gonna have a child. So, when you hear news of this nature, it really hits you right in the heart. So
Yeah.
I'm right with you, Tim. And I think the camaraderie that the players and the officials have, I saw it on Monday night again
Yeah.
in Winnipeg with Ryan Galloway's last game. And I don't think people understand. And you do, but people don't understand the camaraderie that the players and the officials have on the ice. And certainly when you speak about Boone Jenner, you're speaking about that from firsthand knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. I watched that too of Ryan and the respect that the players showed him, and Rick Bowness, who you and I both know very well. Rick's one of the classiest guys in the league. And you know what? I'll be honest, I can tell you this. I watched some of them, but over the last 2 or 3 years, sometimes it's tough to watch because and to my fault, missed out on that opportunity. And I always think about that sometimes. Because it is such a great time, even though if you've and I've told this on podcast before, Craig, the day I was released, David Clarkson reached out to me, and David Clarkson hated referees. I mean, he hated referees. And I see this number pop up, and I answer it, and it's David Clarkson. For a second, I thought he was going to say, "Hey, it looks good on you," and he's like, "Hey, I got your number from Marty Brodeur. I hope you don't mind if I'm calling. I just want to, say I'm sorry and I respected you and blah blah blah." So the point is, even though you battle throughout the years, you still have that respect factor on both sides of the aisle. So, yeah, it's great to see. And then Kevin Pollak, as you know, Kevin Pollak had a phenomenal career. He worked 8 or 10 or 12 conference finals. He worked a Stanley Cup. And he got hit about a month ago. And I texted him the other day. I said, "Hey, is there any chance you're going to get back?" And he goes, "No, I tore my MCL, ACL, and PCL." And this was his last season. And what a way for him to go out. He doesn't get a final game. So you can't, the bottom of the moral of the story, you can't write your own story. You can't write your own ending, right?
Well, you can't, but I was talking to Greg Dvorsky about this, and Greg Dvorsky is helping out in Ontario with a lot of the young officials and with early we're, and he didn't get an opportunity because of COVID.
Correct.
So, now you have Kevin, long serving officials. I mean, yourself, it would be nice if there was an opportunity to just, have that opportunity to go back and just even be in an arena and just, hey, listen, we're inviting you back for your last game.
Right.
You in St. Louis, Kevin and his, wherever it would be, and just kind of let the players acknowledge you and let everybody, because as you well know, the competition is serious and everybody is trying to do their job to the very best and to the highest degree. And you've heard it. People just don't understand that we have the best officials on the planet. But you have a job to do, the players have a job to do, and with the
Yeah.
competition, there's going to be a little bit of friction, but it doesn't diminish the respect that goes between officials and players.
Well, I'll let you champion that with Doug Armstrong. So, but I was doing some research today because to our listeners, I would see you in the bowels of the Saddle Dome, and you were always so gracious. You'd come by the ref's room and I'd be out stretching. You'd always say hi and stop and talk for a minute. And that meant a lot because a lot of GMs at the time, they just didn't. It may maybe not their personality. But I didn't know that you grew up in Rochester. And when I looked today, Jack, your dad, was an executive with the Americans, and your mom, Bridget, I couldn't believe that, was a secretary for Punch Imlach. I couldn't believe that when I read that. I'm like, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was, when you grow up and you don't even really think about it, you just kind of, this is the way it was, right? This is what I knew. I didn't know anything different. And when I joke about hockey being the family business, it literally was the family business. And
Right.
when I was a little bit younger and my dad was in Pittsburgh, and Punch had gone over to the Buffalo Sabres in their expansion year, like whenever Punch and King Clancy used to come to town, my mother was always out to dinner with them, and then I was always in that locker room with the Buffalo Sabres, and you didn't really know. You're young, you don't really have a rooting interest. You're just kind of going, oh boy, this is kind of neat. And
So how old would you have been then?
well, that would have been like in 1970. I would have been 7 years old.
Yeah, so you're
So
old enough to, right,
yeah.
exactly.
But you're sitting around and I always tell the story too, Tim. Like when I learned how to skate, Red Kelly was the coach in Pittsburgh, and his wife Andra, who was a national figure skater, that national champion figure skater in Canada. I first started skating with figure skates. She was the one that taught me how to
Really?
skate. Yeah. So I think back to like Red Kelly and and all these different, and you don't think about it. And then after later on in life, you start to go, oh boy, geez, I was pretty
Pretty
lucky to have,
lucky, right?
really like. And then when I got into the game and started working in the game, it was fascinating to me. People would introduce me, oh, this is Jack Button's son. People knew my mother before they knew my father, and
Right.
they would say, no, this is Bridget D'Souza's son. I knew his mother before I knew his father. George Armstrong and those Leafs players that were all with the Toronto Maple Leafs in that time. I mean, it was
Well,
honestly, I pinched myself. I really do.
you know what? That's like Doug Armstrong. Army's told me many stories where he would sit in the Neil would be working the lines at the old Olympia, and he would bring Doug to the games and sit him in the penalty box. Can you imagine that? Like that's unbelievable. But
Well, that was his punishment for breaking the rules at home.
right, exactly. So speaking about Army, and I don't know this because I know you started with the Minnesota North Stars, and you developed a good relationship with Bob Gainey, because Army told me once that he drove a car for Bobby Clarke in Minnesota, and that's how he kind of got started. Did you work with Army at all in Minnesota, or was that after?
11 years we worked together. We
You
worked
did, eh?
together. Yeah, Doug came and joined us. Maybe that was about 11 years. And Bob Clarke had become our general manager, and Doug joined us. Doug also worked in Washington for a little stretch for David Poile. And my dad was in Washington, and my brother was in Washington at the same time. So the connections ran across. So, when Doug came over, like, I mean, I knew Neil. I mean, obviously, I'd known about Neil, but then I knew Neil, and then working with Doug. And one of the funniest, Doug came in and he worked in the he worked with the I guess now what you would call I don't even know what they call it, but he worked with the players in terms of getting them settled and then made sure like everything worked in terms of their lodging and wherever they lived and then the travel procedures. I mean, Doug pretty much quickly demonstrated that he was much more than that, and he quickly moved into the hockey ops. If he was driving a car for Bob Clark, that didn't last very long. I mean, Doug, Doug very, very clearly showed that he was capable of so much more, and obviously you know what he's been able to do to this point in his career, but he was right into hockey ops very, very early on in his tenure in Minnesota.
And then you won the cup in Dallas in 99. That was Hulley's goal, right?
That was Hulley's goal, and you know it was
one of those. It wasn't things. Without controversy.
What controversy? People ask.
Well, you know, I love Berkey, but geez, man, that was one of the stupidest rules we ever brought in. Was that toe in the crease? When you look back on it, it was unbelievable.
Well, one of the things that's so fascinating, I tell this story often. Earlier on in the playoffs, we had played a game against Colorado. And Pat Verbeek had scored almost exactly the same type of goal that was disallowed.
Yeah.
And Bob Gainey went to the league and he said, wait, we need some clarification on this rule. What Bob had said was there's continuation. And he wasn't standing there if there was continuation. And actually the league clarified the rule. And, you know, Bob had the memo. I mean, we all had the memo in our pocket. But we had had a play against Colorado eerily similar that had been disallowed. So, you know, maybe if that play doesn't happen, maybe there's a different situation that comes out of that game with Brett Hall. But in the end, it worked out well. The Buffalo Sabres fans seem to have never gotten over it, but can't control everybody's feelings, Tim.
They're as Barnaby told me the other day, that I said, they're on a 10-year rebuild. He goes, Pilsy, it's more like a 12-year rebuild. I feel bad for the fans there because something's got to change. But anyway, about a month or two ago, I said something on social media about JR and I were talking about it on the podcast, and I really took a lot of heat from the Toronto fans because I feel like the Toronto fans have this sense of entitlement and arrogance for a team that really, you know, I'm 57 years old, that they haven't won a cup since I was a year old. And you took it was about a month ago, I think you said something on TSN about their back end or something that wasn't good enough. Me personally, they've got a phenomenal team. They're still winning. I've been impressed. I've actually been very impressed in the last month how they've been playing. But I just don't see that team when the playoffs start, Craig, that they've got a back end that's going to be physical enough and they don't really have a shutdown pair. How do you see them going forward?
Well, we know that they have some great players, right? I mean, right. Austin Matthews, I mean, this is his second time scoring 60 goals. I mean, to score 50 is rare. So, you know, Marner and Tavares and Nylander and Morgan Riley. And you know, teams have really good players. Even when you're not a good team, you still have really good players. And I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm of the same mind as you. The playoffs, when you get to the play, first of all, 16 teams are gone. The 16 weakest teams ostensibly right. are out. Now everybody's a good team. Everybody's hard. And I think that the formula is still the same. The ice shrinks. Your time, you don't have as much time. Wendell Clark said this to me a couple of years ago. He said, once you get to the playoffs, players have to realize you have 3 feet less space yep. and your time is reduced by half a second. He goes, if you don't realize that, he goes, you're not going to have success in the playoffs. So what are teams doing? They have big, long defensemen that shrink the ice, that take away the middle. I mean, you watch the St. Louis Blues win in 2019. I mean, look at the blue line. I mean, that blue line was phenomenal. It was long. The Vegas Golden Knights, we can go on and on and on. You were there. You're right in the middle of it. The formula hasn't changed.
You are 100% right. Panger said to me 6 months ago, he goes, the Blues problem is they went from Gunnarsson, Petro, Bouwmeester, big defensemen with long sticks to shorter defensemen with short sticks. You look at Vegas, exactly to your point, their shortest defenseman last year was Alec Martinez at 6'2". So they keep them, people don't understand that. The bigger your defense, traditionally you should be able to keep them on the outside, right? It's tough to get down the middle. And it'll be interesting to see with Toronto. I love Austin Matthews. Sometimes people, I grew up in New Brunswick. I grew up a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. I got pictures of me in Toronto Maple Leafs pajamas. But do I think, now it's great to score 60 goals, but as you know, the proof is in the pudding come the playoffs. Does he have what it takes? Does he have that jam? Does he have that inner intestinal fortitude that says, I'm going to carry this team? I don't know. We haven't seen it yet. He may have it, but we haven't seen it, right?
Well, and I'm just going to say something. I'm surprised that Toronto Maple Leafs haven't signed you yet, because if you were wearing Maple Leafs pajamas and you got pictures, you should sign a long-term free agent contract with them.
Exactly. But,
you know, and I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan for 12 years, so I got to watch the Red Wings really grow and develop. And Steve Yzerman was a great player. I mean, there was no question he was a great player. And, you know, certainly he pushed himself. And they were a team that got to the finals. They were a team that went deep in the playoffs. And the team around him had to get better. And then at the same time, to your point, Steve had to realize that scoring in the playoffs and playing in the playoffs was different. And he did. And it wasn't that he wasn't a good player, but the team got better around him. And then he got to that point where he just said, this is what it takes. And I think I don't think it's just Austin. I think it's also the group around Toronto. I personally believe, Tim, that, you know, Brad Treliving went in there. He watched the team. I think it's obvious to everybody. And yeah, you add Joel Edmondson, you add Ilya Lyubushkin, and they're bigger. But I think at the top end of their blue line is where they really lack. And if you like, I know that Joel Edmondson, you watch Joel Edmondson play, you know, he is going to give everything he's got. But when you're out against Matthew Tkachuk and you're out against David Pastrnak and you're out against Artemi Panarin, it's a mismatch. You can't do it. You need a Petro. You need a Parayko. You need those guys that can match up against those top-end players. So, and they're not easy to find, don't get me wrong. But I think that, you know, players reach a point in time where I think they have to prove it to themselves as much or more than they have to prove it to anybody else that they can do it. And certainly that's where players find themselves.
And do they have the goaltending? I don't know. We'll wait and see. Who do you think is going to make the playoffs in the East? A month ago, I would have said Detroit was going to make the playoffs. They were humming along. I really liked how they were playing. Now I'm like, I feel like Washington almost has an advantage over Detroit, and certainly Charlie Lindgren's played phenomenal. He let in five or six last night, but that's going to happen. Who do you think's going to make it in the East?
Well, watching Sidney Crosby play, you know, 2 weeks ago, Tim, I'd written off the Pittsburgh Penguins. Well, yeah. I'll be honest with you. I thought they were going to have a tough time 3 months ago. 2 weeks ago, I said, oh, it's over. And now Sidney Crosby, and you've been right there watching him from the day he started in this league. And I am absolutely left gobsmacked watching him play. Like, he very well may drag this team into the playoffs. And you talk about not a big supporting cast. He's lacking right now in a supporting cast. Unbelievable what he has been able to do here in this last little stretch. I know it's an uphill road. And Washington, Charlie's been good. The power play's been good. New Jersey, the Islanders. Like, it seems New Jersey's fallen off. The Islanders. You know, it just feels like... Pittsburgh, the Islanders, Philadelphia, and Washington. Two of those four teams, I think, will make the playoffs. I think that... Because they have two paths. They have the wild card and third spot. It's going to be fascinating to watch it down the stretch. You know, Pittsburgh and Washington play on Friday night. Do they play tonight? Do they play tonight or?
No, I think it is on Friday.
Friday night, yeah.
I think it is. You know what? I was talking, do you remember Derek Amell, the longtime?
Oh, sure do, yeah. That's why we have the blue line, the offside rule.
Exactly. I should get him. So he's out in my kitchen right now because he flew in today from Pittsburgh. I should
get say him hi to Derek. Yeah, say I hi will. To Derek. Yeah,
I will. And I was joking with him earlier. I said, when I picked him up today, because he lives in Pittsburgh and he knows Sidney, you know, he's got to know him fairly well. And I said, Sidney Crosby can't want to go play for another team. Like, to me, Sidney Crosby, and I know we know all the stars that have got traded, but he just doesn't strike me like the type that wants to go to another team. But, you know, it pains me, like you say, a few weeks ago when I thought they had no chance of making the playoffs, it pains me to see him, you know, play at a pace that it's hard to replicate at 36, 37 years old. And he's doing it on his own. It's really remarkable. The kid, I just love the guy so much. He's done so much for hockey and so much for Pittsburgh that I just can't see him, Craig, playing for another team. Do you ever think that he would?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, we know how loyal he is, and we know how great he looks in that Pittsburgh Penguins 87, but we also know what a great competitor he is. So as times change, you never know what would happen. But, you know, I'm with you. It would seem to me that, like, Sidney's a Pittsburgh Penguin through and through and through, and he'll finish. You know, go back to 05, and he comes into the league, and I mean, obviously, they Sid the Kid and everything that went with it. But I continue to watch Tim to try to see if there's any fall off in his game. I can't find any.
No, it's unbelievable.
It's frightening. 19 years in the league, he spent more time in the NHL than out of it.
It's remarkable. I think what was the stat the other day? He's got a point per game, right? And I think there's only two or three or four.
One. Gretzky.
And that's Gretzky. That's Gretzky. What do you think about, because I like Torts. He's the type of guy, he just wanted you to be honest. I'd come over and say, you know what, Torts, I screwed that up. I thought, you know, I got a bad sight line. No problem, Timmy, thanks. He was always really good to deal with. I had meetings in his office sometimes, once with Nick Foligno, because Nick Foligno thought that I didn't respect him, and I wanted to have a meeting and explain to Nick that I do respect you, and Torts was in there and he loved it. What's the end game here in Philly? Because Brandon Dubinsky certainly spoken about him, like, it's unbelievable. Do you think this? Can you coach like that this day and age, or do you lose them after a while?
Well, let me say this about coaches, and you've been around the greatest coaches that have been in the game. And what I would say to this is, every coach comes with an expiry date for one reason or another. Wherever you start, I mean, Craig Berube is a great, great person. He won a Stanley Cup. You know, Todd McClellan, great person, you know, and all this. Every coach has an expiry date. So, whether you're coaching, wherever it is, I mean, it's just the reality of the business. What I would say, and I want to go back to what you just said about your conversation with Nick. And John, today, I watched 15 minutes and 42 seconds of his press conference today after practice with Philadelphia. And John talked about, you know, trying to get the players to realize at a certain point in time, and his job is to try to push the level to a certain to a high level where they don't even know if they can get there. He goes, I say at times, he goes, after a game, I might be a little bit harsher, but, you know, I'm not sure they can get there. He goes, but I know they're not sure either. So it's my job to try to show the way. But he talked about honesty, and he talked about, you know, let's just be direct with one another, and let's make sure that, you know, that we're open to the back and forth. And he said, I've become a lot better at that. And I think it's a great example of what you just talked about. Like, he wasn't going to come to you and say, hey, you know, I want you to know Nick. Oh, now, Tim, you tell Nick it's okay. Yeah. Let's get everybody together. Let's sit down. Let's go face to face, and let's have it out. And he talked about that. But I think where the Philadelphia Flyers are right now, I think that John's done a fantastic job. He's not going to be the coach there forever. We know that. And certainly, I think when you look at the outs, I never thought Philadelphia would be in the spot they were in at the beginning of the year. And
nobody,
you got to give them full marks, right? And it works until it doesn't work. Yeah, exactly. I guess that's the way I would say.
Well, and they've got, as you know, you've got Keith Jones and Danny Brewer, two of the greatest guys around. They've got a good leadership group there. And it'll be interesting to see. Do you know anything, Craig? Because I had never heard of the guy before. Do you know anything about this Ivan Fedotov? He's 6'7", right? The goalie.
Oh yeah, he's it's interesting. They signed him a couple years ago,
Okay.
And then Russia said, you got to serve in the military. So they kept him from coming to the NHL.
Really?
So he had the Flyers had drafted him back in 2015, I believe, late in the draft, a big goaltender, and let him develop. And then they signed him. And then I guess right before he was coming over, and they said, nope, you have to do your mandatory. I believe that the Flyers or the NHL appealed it. And the uh-huh. But how do you enforce it? So
right.
now he's playing in Cska, the Red Army, with where Sergei Fedorov was, and they just decide, okay, we're letting you go. Like, you know, they hold you back, and then they just say, you're out of here, and over he comes. And, you know,
he's only played that time when Erickson got pulled, right? He hasn't started a game yet.
No.
You got to think he's going to start in the next couple games for sure.
Well, they sent Sandstrom down, so yeah, you would have to believe it.
And I loved it because you know the Philly fans. Like, I love the Philly fans. He came out in his pregame warm-up skating with his teammates, and they gave him a standing ovation, and he saluted the crowd. Like, we're gonna if he wins in Philly, it'll be unbelievable, right? Like, it could be a really great story. And who knows, if they get in the playoffs, he may be the type of guy that all of a sudden carries the load. Like, you don't know. It could be a phenomenal story.
Well, and it's a phenomenal story, just the way he's come over and embraced it. And if they win, and you win in Philadelphia, you win forever. You never have to buy another meal for as long as you live in Philadelphia if you win there. And certainly, you know, he's an interesting like goaltender at that size, but he's got some really good numbers and a really good record of accomplishment in the KHL.
It'll be interesting to see. We'll watch it over the next few months. What happens with the Sean Couturier bit? Because to me, when I look at that team, and I like Sean Couturier, it's not taking anything away from him. But when I look at that team, I'm like, should Travis Konecny be the captain? Should he be? He seems like that guy, that energy guy, leader, leads by example. You know, not too often you've got a coach benching a captain, and in this day and age, feelings, as you know, get hurt really easy, and their agents get upset and they want you out of there. So it'll be interesting to see, because I see Konecny as a perfect captain for Philly.
Yeah, well, and when you, I always think about it in these terms too. You think about who embodies the spirit of that team, the way Travis plays, and you think about the Philadelphia Flyers, right? I always say if they ever wanted to change the emblem for the Philadelphia Flyers, just put Bobby Clark's face on the chair, and he embodied what the Flyers were. I think Konecny does exactly the same thing, and that's not a criticism of Sean. Sean's been a really good player coming back from the injuries and everything. Yeah, he struggled, and certainly nobody wants to see him have to go through what he went through with the scratch. But at the same time, this is John Tortorella's honesty. You know, we have standards, and we're going to hold you to the same standard. I would suspect that John took a lot longer with Sean Couturier than he took with other players to reach that point. And certainly, you know, Sean's hurt right now, and hopefully it's nothing serious. But Travis, just to me, he's a Flyer through and through.
You know what? I agree with you, and I give Torts. Hey, listen, if Torts is going to win or lose, he's going to do it his way, and you have to commend him for that, because you look at Craig Berube, and you know Chief's been over at my house. I love the guy; he's a tremendous person, and he may regret that he didn't bench Jordan Kyrou. You know, Jordan Kyrou was playing like a dog, and he had basically shut down on Chief. But it's tough to sit guys that are making $8 million a year, as you know. And I want you to give your opinion on this, because I have mine. And, you know, I think this year somebody, it might have even been my son the other day when I told him another coach got fired. He's like, how many's that been this year? I go, I think 7 or 8. And it didn't happen like that years ago, Craig, because teams would make blockbuster trades, right? You think of the Toronto Calgary trades, the St. Louis Calgary trades, with, you know, you could make blockbuster moves with 4 or 5 players because of, there wasn't the salary cap. But now, because of the salary cap, you can't. So you need to fire the coach. Do you agree with that assertion?
Yeah, I do. And how many times do we hear this? It's easier to fire one coach than 20 players, right? And
Right.
because and also with the what I call the CBA, the COVID CBA, you know, like we hit COVID, we hit the pandemic. And so now 4 years, we're going to come to the completion of this particular amendment to the CBA. Salary cap's going to rise, and certainly we're going to get back to a space where hopefully there's some breathing room for teams and it opens up avenues for trade. But this is what ends up happening now. Okay, we can't change the players, we can't make a significant transaction, so now we got to do it behind the bench. Todd McClellan, I mean, who I think is a fabulous coach.
Me
I mean,
too.
the LA Kings were on fire, and there's an example. Pierre-Luc Dubois was no different than Jordan Kyrou. You know,
Right.
it's a big contract, big trade, and you know, Todd's. They know he didn't make the big. I mean, he knew what he was getting. That he felt good about it. I know that, but you know, when you sign a player to that big deal, you know, 8.5 million times 8 years. You know, you are now looking at, hey, you know, oh, he's not playing. Okay, well, what can we do? We better make a coaching change. And Jim Hiller's gone in there, and LA's played better. But that's what happens now, is the coach pays the big price
Yeah.
for individual players not performing.
You know, you mentioned PLD and JR, and I have been critical upon on him, you know, because regardless of what his salary is, he wanted out of Columbus, then he wanted out of Winnipeg. He gets to LA, he's wearing flip-flops and, you know, driving probably a Porsche to going to the beach, and life's pretty good. At some point, you gotta step up. Like, you gotta, you know, he just hasn't. I don't know what it is. And I saw Doughty's comments there a month ago, and it was, I'm sure, directed at a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois. So it's time for him to step up, Craig, because he's asked for different environments. And well, now he's in one of the best environments with one of the best ownership. You got Luke Robitaille, you got Rob Blake, you had Todd McClellan, who is, I got to know him through Chaser. Him and Chaser know each other well, is one of the greatest guys in hockey, and he got him fired, so it'll be interesting.
Well, think about that. You just mentioned, you know, the LA Kings. You mentioned Luke. You mentioned Rob. You mentioned Drew. You got Anze Kopitar, just an
Right.
unbelievable captain. You got Philip Deneau. Philip Deneau, I mean, every single shift he goes out there, you would think he was playing game seven of the Stanley Cup final, right? So, and I'm just naming a few, but like players that are dialed in to give their very best. I mean, it's real simple for me. You know, Pierre-Luc Dubois, who I've watch play for a long time, is capable of so much more. Daryl Sutter used to say this to his players: I'm not going to ask you to do more than you can, but don't give me less. And
Right.
Pierre-Luc Dubois has given far less.
Right. You follow a lot, like, as far as if a team makes a trade, you're very knowledgeable on what players they gave up and draft picks and so on. How is Vegas? It seems, you know, any UFA or any trade, big trade deadline this year, people were talking about Vegas is in on this, you know, and they got Hanifin, they got Hurdle. How is, because I honestly don't know. Do they have anything left in the cupboard as far as draft picks, or are there, do they're just like balls to the walls saying we're going for it, and we don't care? Like, can you touch on that?
I think from the day they entered the league, and it's interesting because George McPhee talked about, you know, being in Washington and at times you take a conservative approach. Well, he ends up in Vegas and he said it's been anything but conservative with Bill Foley, the owner. And, you know, they go to the Stanley Cup final in their first year. You know, Kelly McCrimmon, who I've known for a very, very long time, you know, you go back and look what he did in the Western Hockey League. He was always bold. He wasn't afraid to take a risk. And we tend to look at the draft just through the lens of a first round draft pick.
Right.
Go if you go and look at what the Vegas Golden Knights have done, they've done a really nice job of acquiring players. Like, you know, the St. Louis Blues end up getting Zach Dean. and the trade for Barbashev. So what the Vegas Golden Knights do say is, okay, Zach's not going to help us right now, but Barbashev can help us now, and he's got enough years on him. They give him a 5-year contract extension, right. So they know they have him. But if you don't draft Zach Dean, and I believe they drafted him 31st and late in the first round, you can't even think about making that trade. Dorfeyov, who's playing right now, I think he's got 12 or 13 goals. They draft him in the third or fourth round. They have an excellent player playing in Saginaw, and Saginaw will be in the Memorial Cup this year because they're hosting it. A kid by the name of Matias Sapovalov. He's not going to be much more than maybe a 2-3 center, but big, strong, and he's going to be a really good, strong, solid player. I think that they looked at it and said, we need to get players out of other parts of the draft. They've done that. And then they went out and they did the key things. They traded for Mark Stone. They traded for Jack Eichel. And then they were able to sign Alex Pietrangelo as a free agent. You can do all those other things that we've talked about. They went and got three difference makers. I think they're a model, Tim, for other teams. You can draft and draft and draft. But when it comes time to get a difference maker, you got to look at it and explore it. And I think that the Vegas Golden Knights have done that. Their prospect pool is, I just mentioned Matias Sapovalov. He's going to be able to come in there and be able to play. They trade for Hurdle. What does that mean for Chandler Stephenson? It looks like he's going to have to leave, which means that other teams better be in on Chandler Stephenson.
It's funny how Vegas, I always thought that, and I'm sure you agree, I always thought that Vegas should be the first pro team, pro sports league to go to Las Vegas. And they did that. And we've seen the success. I tell people, their first year in the league, even their second, third, fourth year, I could be working a Tuesday night game against the Buffalo Sabres, and you would think it was Game 7 in that building because of the atmosphere. It's incredible. And what I was going to say is it's now a place that players want to go and play. If all of a sudden the player's getting an offer from Winnipeg or he's getting an offer from Vegas, you guarantee his wife, Sam, we're going to Vegas. We're living in Sunderland. And so what do you think about the whole, because sometimes themselves, Tampa, they kind of get beat up with this whole LTIR, long-term disability. And Mark Stone is not sitting out right now waiting for the playoffs. He's got a ruptured spleen, I think. And do you think the GMs or the GMs will change that going forward maybe in a couple of years? Because they're not breaking any rules. But, Kucherov, a lot of people wouldn't have known that Tampa did it until Kucherov wore the t-shirt and kind of flaunted it, right? He kind of rubbed it in everybody's nose. So will they change that, do you think, at some point, or they're just going to continue on?
Well, it's a CBA-related issue. It's part of the CBA. So you're going to have to make an amendment to the CBA. My understanding is that it's never been an issue with the general managers. I mean, when I say general managers, I'm talking about the group as a whole. As you well know, there's always somebody that needs a little bit of grease because there's a squeaky wheel in that general manager's room, or more than a few squeaky wheels. So there's always going to be somebody against it or thinking there should be a modification, which is fine. But my understanding over the years is there hasn't been an issue. I know a couple of years ago at a general manager's meeting in the media, there was all this talk. Oh, yeah, this is going to be. I think the conversation was 120 seconds. Do we have any issues? Right. Now, I know that the league has tasked the executive, the GM executive committee. Go and talk to the managers. Let's hear what they have to say. Let's just try to get some input on it. But from what I understand, it's important to have long-term injury reserve. I think it, what you just pointed, it's the perception. It's Kucherov, kind of poking in the eye. And certainly it's those types of things that sometimes lead to change. But what I would say is if there's not a problem, don't try to find a solution where there's not a problem or not a significant problem. And I think that's what the league is trying to caution themselves against.
We talked about Toronto earlier, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Edmonton Oilers. I truly think they're the best team coming out of Canada right now. I'm a big Rick Tocchet fan. I love Tocchet. What he's done with him and Adam Foote, what they've done with that team is tremendous. They've fallen off as of late. I'm sure he'll get it back on the tracks, but I just see, you know, I love Kenny Holland. I you'll love this. It was a couple summers ago. I would go to visit Panger up in Michigan, and he goes, "Hey, we're playing golf tomorrow, and we're playing with Kenny Holland and Iserman at Oakland Hills." And I said, "I haven't seen Steve in a long time." I said, "I kicked Steve out of a hockey game in Nashville." I said, "I hope he still not doesn't hold a grudge." So anyway, but I love, you know, Kenny. He's just one of the gentlemen of the game, right? And the Perry pickup, Connor Carrick pickup, they were weak. Jamal Mayers and I went to an Oiler Blues game this year, last year. Jammer goes, their problem is the third and fourth line. Their problem is the third. They don't have enough depth in the third and fourth line. They've added to that, and I think that's a team. Well, obviously with Connor McDavid, but Stuart Skinner has seemed to find his game this year. Found his game. What's your feeling on the Oilers right now?
Okay, you all. I want to say one thing. I bet you Steve didn't forget that you threw him out of a game.
No, he definitely didn't forget. Right?
When I agree with exactly with what you and Jammer had to say about the third and fourth line. Bruce Cassidy last year after they beat Edmonton, he says, "We beat Edmonton with our third and fourth lines."
Yeah.
He said, he goes, "That was a real key to us winning, the depth that they had." You know, when you look at Adam Henrique, you look at Sam Carrick, and I think Corey Perry also, the edge that he brings. Like, you know, he can stand up and look around to anybody in that room and say to them, "This ain't good enough," because Everybody in that room knows that he knows. Correct. And having that type of and Corey has the confidence. He's not going to sit there in a corner, "Oh, it's Connor McDavid." He's not going to be afraid to challenge Connor McDavid. And I think they're much, much deeper. And I also believe, too, when I listen to Connor McDavid talk now, I just see this maturity in terms of understanding that I can be as great as I am. Leon can be as great as he can be. He goes, "But this is about what we have to do as a team." And the way they've committed themselves and the way Kenny has supported the group by adding those players, in my view, I get asked that question. I think that Edmonton is the best team in Canada. The West is going to be a grind. But yeah, I think the Edmonton Oilers are the team that can withstand the grind and compete for the Stanley Cup as the best of the seven Canadian teams.
Like, how much fun is it, seriously, to watch Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid play? Like, you're a couple years older than me, not much, but, you know, we grew up watching Gretzky and we watched Lemieux and some amazing players. And it's everything's relevant, you know, different eras and so on. But if Edmonton's playing, I'm turning it on and I'm telling my Bronson, my 12-year-old, to come and watch the game, because every shift he may do something that you've never seen before. It's unbelievable, Craig, how good this kid is.
I was doing the Montreal game last Tuesday in Denver. And so, you know, Montreal rolls in there. Marty St. Louis had just returned to the team.
Yep.
And it was, I mean, you know how what the team feels about him. Marty's such an unbelievable person. And 43 seconds into the game, it's 1-0 Colorado. MacKinnon he explodes. It's one. And I remember I'm standing there and I'm going, "Uh-oh, this could get ugly real fast." But Montreal ended up winning the game 2-1. Caden Primo had a great game. But every time MacKinnon touches the puck, just like every time McDavid touches the puck, you get right to the edge of your seat because you know something great can happen. And the speed at which they play it, Tim, you've been right there on the ice with the best players, with the greatest players that have played the game. And, you know, my son-in-law is a huge Oilers fan, huge. And when I get a chance, I'll take him and watch Edmonton Oilers. He just can't believe what it's like to watch him in person. He just is in awe. And, you know, I'm the same as you. Like, I mean, I go to the game. I'm a fan. I'm a fan watching Nathan MacKinnon and McDavid because their brilliance, it just doesn't show any limits. They can do so many different things in the game. And when we talk about selling excitement and selling the skill of hockey, those two guys are the poster boys.
Well, you know what? And going back to Edmonton and their chances, they better hope Stuart Skinner doesn't go down or get injured or maybe lose his edge because they need him to be at the top of their game. But I've been impressed with their defense this year. You know, Evan Bouchard, I didn't realize. I knew he was a good player, but I didn't realize what a tremendous player he is. He's got 70 some points, I think, this year. It's incredible. Going back to prospects, can you tell me a little bit about Macklin Celebrini and what you think of him, and is he the consensus first overall pick?
So I'll answer the second question first. Yes, I mean, there's not a better player available than Macklin Celebrini. That doesn't mean over time that somebody might not emerge and be a really good player, but Macklin stands alone. I'm going to give you two words, a first name and a last name, to describe Macklin Celebrini: Jonathan Toews.
Really?
That to me is his game. That to me, and you know, people say, well, you know, he's got more than Jonathan Toews. And Jonathan Toews was a franchise superstar in a very different way than Nathan MacKinnon was a franchise superstar, different than Steven Stamkos or different than Connor McDavid. But the importance of what Jonathan Toews delivered to the Chicago Blackhawks, that's what I think Macklin is. Last year in the USHL, he was the best player in the league at 16 years of age. He went to the U18 tournament for Canada. He was a year younger than just about every player there, and he was phenomenal in helping Canada win a bronze medal. He's now at BU. He's been phenomenal as a 17-year-old first-year player there. His game is so complete. His game is so defined and so competitive, and I think that you're getting what I call a pillar franchise player in Macklin Celebrini. And you know, you think about his dad. I don't know if you're aware of what his dad's the
No.
sport. His dad's the sport and performance physiologist for the Golden State Warriors. And so, you know, Macklin played in the San Jose area. I mean, to me, the completion of this story is San Jose winning the lottery and Macklin going back to San Jose. You know, he's been around the likes of Steph Curry and that Klay Thompson and you know that great group of winners in Golden State. So, you know,
Well,
it'd be nice for Backlund and I think for the family for him maybe to re and it'd be great for San Jose.
it'd be great for Mike Greer because as you know, like I worked my first playoff game in San Jose. That building rocks. Like they've got a great fan base there. I loved working there. Loud, passionate fans. And but it's funny you bring that up because I didn't know that backdrop, and that's why I've got you on today, because you're a wealth of knowledge. But I said to somebody the other day, I said, I wonder if would he rather go to the Chicago Blackhawks and play with Bedard or go to a team like San Jose that is really on a real rebuild? You know, I don't know. Would he be like, you know what? I don't need to go home. I'll play with Bedard in Chicago.
Well, I mean, so let me just why don't we just evaluate the options? I get to go to Chicago and play with Bedard, or I get to
Right.
go home and play in San Jose, like, you know, play in a place that he knows pretty well in the, you know, the Golden State Warriors. I mean, I know this, whoever drafts Macklin Selber, whoever gets the opportunity to draft first overall, they're not losing.
No.
He's going to help that team be successful eventually, just like the great ones have. But, you know, an opportunity to go play with Connor Bedard, I mean, it's Connor never ceases to amaze me. He is the next you know, when you think about young superstars, I mean, he only turns 19 in July, Tim, and he's a superstar in every
Well,
way.
and not a slight on the players that he's playing with right now, but let's be honest, he's you know let's Chicago's not a very good hockey club right now, and he's not surrounded by great players. So you're absolutely right. Like, hats off to him. Just a couple more questions, and we'll wrap this up. I would love to see a Florida Boston conference final. I think it would be an absolute war. And I had to laugh because Pat Maroon's a good buddy of mine. He's a St. Louis guy. And I laughed today when I saw on the internet, he's sitting beside Brad Marchand in the dressing room, and there's a picture of them laughing. I'm like, this is what makes hockey so good. He hated the Boston Bruins when he played for St. Louis, and he probably hated Marchand, and now they're on the same team. And that's what I love about hockey, is that all of that goes out the window. And in the first game that he plays, because he had just minor back surgery, And he'll be back in the next, hopefully, few days. But the first game he plays in Boston and gets in a fight, all those Boston fans are going to just love Pat Maroon. But I would love to see a conference final of those two teams because I think it would be a war.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, first of all, after the year that the Boston Bruins had last year and get knocked out by Florida, Florida having a good year this year, right? Like, Boston would love to get their revenge on the Florida Panthers. There's no question about it. And, you know, obviously, Patty's won three Stanley Cups and, you know,
remarkable.
Everything. Yeah, it's remarkable because I've watched Patty play since he was in junior hockey. And, you know, people talk about his skating. And it's the same thing you hear about Corey Perry. I was Bruce Boudreau talking about Corey Perry. He said, Corey Perry wasn't a good skater 15 years ago. Like, why is everybody worried? And you know this, right? Pat Maroon has game. Pat Maroon is shrewd. He's out there on the ice. He's cunning. He knows how to play the game. And that's the type of player that you need and you want when it gets down to the real serious moments in serious games. And Patty, they're going to love him in Boston because the other thing that he does so well is he gets other teams unsettled.
Yeah.
And however he does it, and that becomes a factor come playoff time.
You know what? A lot of the playoffs, it's board battles and it's puck battles down below the goal line. And Pat Maroon's one of the best at those. I saw it in 2019 when he scored the overtime winner here against Dallas. And that's the playoffs are a different animal. I've said this before. You have players that have never thrown a check for 82 games are now finishing checks in the first round of the playoffs. And so he brings that element. What do you think? I'm still not sold, and this is the last question for you. I'm still not sold. I know they're a very good hockey team. It's just something about it that I just don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on with the Carolina Hurricanes. I know they're a good team. Are they a team that could come out of the East?
Yes, I would say yes, they're a team. And I think that there's a lot of people that kind of look at the Carolina Hurricanes in the same way. Really good team.
Yeah,
a lot of respect for Rod Brind'Amour and a lot 100%. Of respect for the way they play. But can they just what you talked about, the board battles, the in tight battles? You know, I referenced Wendell Clark earlier in this conversation that once you have to realize come playoff time, you got three less feet and your time is reduced by half a second.
Correct.
And that's what the Carolina Hurricanes, I think, have to look. They've tried to address it in different ways. They've tried to add some different players. I love the addition of Jake Gensel. He's a proven performer. He's a proven performer in the playoffs. Kuznetsov, you know, kind of on a redemption type move there. He was great when the Caps won the Stanley Cup back in 2018. So, They're probably hoping that these players. I love Brent Burns. I think that he's a player that can make a great difference in a game. But I think the Carolina Hurricanes have to prove it to themselves more than they have to prove it to you and me.
Right.
We'll recognize it when we see it,
right.
And we'll give them their due. But they got to show themselves that they're capable of doing it. It's kind of getting past that hurdle. They've gone so far and they haven't been able to get past that last hurdle. They got to get over that hurdle or they're forever going to be a team that, well, doesn't look like you can win. And you'll remember this. And I remember, you know, the Washington Capitals and my father and David Poile worked together for years. In the late 80s and the 90s, the Washington Capitals were one of the best teams in the league.
Right.
They could never get over the hurdle. And go back and look at their players. They just couldn't get over the hurdle.
Langway, Hunter, just on and on and on. Like, it was unbelievable the players they had back then. But you're right, they just couldn't. You know what? That's a good analogy. So I'm going to end it there. I've kept you long enough on a night off. I appreciate it. You are a wealth of knowledge. I respect you so much, buddy. And I really sincerely appreciate you coming on and doing this with me tonight. And good luck the rest of the season. I can't wait to watch you on TSN and into the playoffs and all the best.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you. I appreciate our exchanges and not just tonight, but all the time and over the years. And I will say this with no JR here. JR knows this, but I will not stop beating the drum for JR and Keith Tkachuk into the Hockey Hall of Fame until they're in and they get that call.
It's a crime. It's a crime. Yep. It's not right. And I appreciate you saying that because they both have the numbers. I was just talking to Walt yesterday, actually, and and they both have the numbers. It's not fair, and unfortunately, we won't get into it, the political everything and so on. But yeah, I appreciate it because I what JR's done for hockey, the personality that he was, but the player that he was. When you talked about the type of player that played for Philly, he was the type of player that played for Philly, right? That's why the fans still revere him there. They love him there. You know, every team that he played for, love him. But you know, I agree with you 100%, buddy. So
Well, I'm not going to stop beating the drum. I'm telling you, I will not stop beating the drum. So,
good.
okay.
Thanks a lot, bud. I appreciate you
Yeah, have
coming
a great
on.
day. Yeah, thanks. I
Thanks. You too,
appreciate you.
Craig.
Yeah,
See you,
bye-bye.
buddy. Bye-bye.